No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. We have a special guest tonight, a dear friend of mine, a social activist, a man who has been head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference here in Washington, D.C., which you all know was started by Dr. King. He's just a great guy, and we're here to talk, as I think everybody in America is aware, it's the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King this week. I'm sure that Keith's been involved, so let's bring Keith Silver on, a dear friend, a great activist, and a civil rights leader. Keith, are you with? I'm sorry, Maria. I keep on forgetting it.
You always do.
I'm sorry, Maria. This has been the biggest news of the week. Maria Sanchez came to Washington, D.C., and I've met her, and she's even more wonderful than I thought she was.
Ditto, which is ditto.
Amazing to me.
And so, broadcasting from the District of Columbia, too.
Yes.
And your amazing home with your fabulous wife, and I just got to meet your son, Nick, and have the pleasure of your company. And the District of Columbia is so stimulating. Talk about diversity and talk about all these events, and it's always going on. And then, oh, yes, just happened to be here for the cherry blossoms to peak. So, and, yeah, no rain or snow. So, yes, amazing time. Thank you, Michael.
And we're having one of our most amazing residents on today, in Keith
I
Silver.
Know. It's so fabulous.
Keith, are you there? Are you with us?
Yes, sir. Well, hello there. My senator, close friend, and associate, Senator Michael D. Brown, and hello to you, Miss Maria Sanchez. I've been wanted to personally thank you, Miss Sanchez, for reaching across the aisle every opportunity you've had. So we appreciate your service to our
Sweet. I really do. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
So Keith, tell us, what have you been doing this week? I know you've been very active. What's been going on this week with all the commemoration about Dr. King's life? I got to tell you, Keith, every time I think of the fact that the man, you and I are the same age, Keith. We both got out of high school the same year. But when I think about this man who changed the world before he reached the age of 40, I'm just amazed at that. So what have you been doing this week?
Well, quite frankly, Senator, I guess this has just been an extension, a year-long extension, starting from the King Parade, which we had in January. It's a whole year-long of MLK 50 events concerning the observance of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And right here, if I could pause, I'd like to ask your listening audience, every time they speak about the 50th anniversary of the assassination, please interject the word the 50th observance as opposed to using the word anniversary. I've spoken to Martin Luther King III on this issue, and he prefers if everyone uses the word 50th observance of the assassination because they have mixed emotions during this time, and he says the word observance is best. But, Senator, this all started back in January, as you know. You have been an active participant every year of the for the 12 past 12 years of the Martin Luther King Peace Walk and Parade. So we use that activity as a launching pad to kick off the whole year of activity. So we've been in this mode, 50th anniversary mode, since January, since the King Parade. So now when we come up on April 4th, this is a solemn occasion, because anybody that was in our age group, or at least in your teenage years, everybody can recall where you were when you got the word Dr. King had been assassinated. This was sort of a pivotal moment in history. So same way everybody can recall where you were when you heard President Kennedy was assassinated. Everything just stopped. But being a native Washingtonian center, I have vivid memories of it. And quite frankly, I had the opportunity to accompany our congressional delegate, former Congressman Walter Fauntroy, who was a key person through the heyday of the civil rights movement of the 60s. And we've just been observing Dr. King in the best way we could. Just very quickly, as we talk about the assassination, Washington, D.C. virtually burned to the ground. The 14th Street corridor from what now is Columbia Heights, like at 14th Street on down to U Street, it was a riot-torn area. It was window-breaking, looting, and just about a little bit of everything. The night of April the 4th, people got the word started coming over the news around 6 or 7 or 8 p.m., and by 9 or 10, the rioting and looting had began. But by the morning of April the 5th, everything was out of control. It was mass chaos, rioting and looting. And the reason why I invoked the name Congressman Walter Fauntroy, he didn't get elected to Congress in 1971, but Reverend Fauntroy was the congressional representative of Martin Luther King Jr. to the president, President Johnson. So Fauntroy had been pivotal in the 63, coordinating the 63 March on Washington, the 65 Selma to Montgomery March. He was instrumental in the passage of the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Bill. So during the rioting, my contention is the Honorable Reverend Walter Fauntroy still hasn't got his just due for quelling the rioting and looting. Because I heard Reverend Fauntroy come over the radio. He told us to put down them bricks and bottles and Molotov cocktails, because King was a man of nonviolence. And if anybody respected their work, he urged us to put those bricks down and go home. And quite frankly, Senator, I wasn't so honorable as I am now. I thank you for that kind and generous introduction. But 15 years old, I was a hothead. But when Fauntroy came across the radio, I can tell you, he stopped two bricks from going through them windows. Because when Reverend Fauntroy told us to go home, I know for a fact a lot of people respected him and went home. So I like to give when you see Reverend Fauntroy, just let him know what he means to the history of this city. And that's my vivid recollection of the April 4th rioting.
Well, you know, he is an amazing man, Keith. I'm also a big fan of Reverend Fauntroy's. He's always been very kind to me, and he's a leader. You know, leadership is based on character, and this man has great character, and he's a great leader. And just to put into context a little bit what Keith is saying about the 14th Street corridor, I lived at Ground Zero at Thomas Circle, 14th and N Street, but not during the riots. I moved in 71, and it was still burnout. From there to U Street, it was still burnout. They hadn't replaced one store after 3 years. I mean, it was really terrible for a long time. And you're right, Keith, it almost burned to the ground because people were so hurt about what had happened. And that was, as we all know, part of 1968. What a tumultuous year, right? Then Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. You had John F. Kennedy, you had Martin Luther King, all these great leaders who had done so much. And the pain was palatable.
And what I appreciated you, Keith, too, saying about it's not the anniversary, it's the observant. It's those subtle messages that we give to one another that help inform the human condition and the experience. And that's a perfect example of how we should apply our English language in that regard. And
thank
have you
so
been
much
doing that? Please, Maria, but do you understand how words frame us? That, and so by you saying anniversary, that would suggest a celebration, really, right?
Yes.
But if you say
observance,
we're saying we're acknowledging, we're hopefully atoning, we're remembering, and it is a somber occasion. It's not a celebration.
Exactly right, Maria. Thank you for putting it out there just like that, you know. And it was just a moving moment in time. We knew Dr. King, and of course, y'all know King was a man of peace, and he tried to connect global peace and a beloved community with the all races and cultures. So everybody was impacted by the man's death. And as we move forth, we can. He's left us a blueprint and template on how to live and how to try to work with each other.
Well,
and, Senator,
go ahead, Maria.
We
go
might want to add that of all things, how poignant is this that we were at the African American Museum this afternoon?
Yeah, it was. It's an amazing experience. Everybody that comes to Washington should go there. There are lots of wonderful and sad and
terrible
encouraging stories
and depressing
but I don't think, and Maria,
humbling,
you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's a museum in Washington that tells the story better than the African American Museum of History and Culture. They take you from the days of slavery right into the turmoil that Keith Silver is telling us about today in the 1960s, and they do it in a beautiful way. I find it a very moving experience. And Maria, as you know, I talked about there were so many kids there today, and I said to you,
and
you
families,
know, and families, and it just troubles me somewhat that people think of this as ancient history. Sometimes my kids think about, I tell them these things, they think about it as ancient history. But Keith Silver, young, handsome man that he is, and I were in high school when this was going on.
Yeah. Well, Senator, you know, a lot of people, for years, people have been thinking I was getting by on my looks. But those of you that know me know that is not the case. Maria, that's not the case. Trust me. I thank you and Maria for bringing up the African American Museum, because, as I say, we've been in MLK. A lot of people in the city, we've been in MLK 50 mode all year long. In addition to visiting the African American Heritage Museum, I'd like to invite people. I can't think of a better way to celebrate Dr. King's life than visiting the his Martin Luther King Memorial down there on the mall. And secondly, people can visit the Lincoln Memorial and actually stand on the steps where he delivered the I Have a Dream speech. And then I think you will still have a tremendous feeling when you visit these historic landmarks in our city. And it's just a great experience for not only tourists, but people that live here. Yeah.
I so wanted to take Maria down to see the Martin Luther King Memorial today, but we couldn't because it happens it happens to be beautifully positioned in the middle of the cherry blossoms. And the cherry it was just packed today with people looking at the cherry blossoms. And for those of you who have not had the experience of coming to Washington and seeing this memorial, it's placed strategically in between the Jefferson Memorial and the Lincoln Memorial. So the three of them together kind of make this visual band. So you can see these three great people that were about liberating people. And I just want to add this funny note. One of the greatest honors that I've had is I got to stand there as an ambassador when they opened the memorial as an elected official. And I got to watch people who hadn't seen each other since nights they went on Freedom Rides. I remember these two people hugging in front of me who hadn't seen each other since they were teenagers. And they had both come together before the memorial, which I think they were both amazed had ever happened, given their experience. And it was just such a moving thing. And I also remember the speech that John Lewis gave, and he said that he loved the memorial because it was 39 feet tall, and the only thing that Dr. King was really self-conscious about is he thought he was short. So he said it was a fitting tribute to have a 39-foot statue to him, and it really is an amazing piece of work. You should go down and see it.
Yes, it's a moving piece. And I tell you, Senator, I like you touched on something that when people hadn't seen each other for years since the Freedom Rides and all like that. And so that's sort of like with the King Peace Walking Parade that you've been an integral part of. You make friendships that last you over the years. We've been doing this for 12 years, and it's just a warm experience as you pass people throughout the year. I encourage everyone to participate in activities because you miss a blessing by not meeting people and fellowshipping. But that was a good point you had just brought up. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We seem to have a little background noise. Do we have a caller, Doug? We had a caller named Malcolm, Maurice. I believe. Oh, I'm sorry, Maurice. Is he still with us?
Yeah.
Maurice.
Hi, thank you for your patience.
That's fine. Hello?
Thanks. Yeah, hey. We're here. Hey. I don't know what the... Doug, can you figure out what that noise is?
Perfect.
Okay, we're getting something that's coming through. I'm sorry, Maurice. Go ahead and tell us what's your question. You have a question or a comment?
I do, and I hope maybe you can help me. All right, okay. First of all, Keith is a good friend of mine. Keith Silver? Matter of fact, we went to school together. Keith, you still on the line?
Yes. Hello, Brother Maurice. Great hearing from you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the info, man. Really appreciate it. And what my concern is that over the last couple of weeks, I shared this with Keith, and I'm glad that I'm having a chance to really speak about it. I have been talking, well, put it this way, I have been putting some information out that I shared with Keith that I saw as a way to better the situation for youth who are traumatized from these school shootings. And I came up with a proposal, actually a solution to end mass school shootings in America once and for all. And I've been trying to get it out to the right people, hopefully who will understand how passionate I am about it, but even more see how practical it is. Because every time I see whatever it is they're trying to do, I don't see it as really working. It's not cost effective, and it only adds more pressure to teachers or to anyone else who thinks this is going to work. And I'm kind of confused because I had put a copy of what I came up with directly into the hands of the mayor, and I never got a response back yet. So maybe one of you can give me an idea of what's really going on, because I don't know.
To whom you contacted the mayor, and how long ago was it, and what is it that you suggested?
This was about 2.5 weeks. I went down to Thurgood Marshall, where the survivors of the Florida shooting had come to school, and they were, you know, in a deep conversation about trying to address these issues right before they had the March for Life. A couple of weeks before, even at that time, they had the shooting on the 20th of March just took place at the school in Maryland. So this was one of those things that had not only alerted me to just how terrible the situation is, but I still see it as there's not a good solution, you know, once and for all to put this down, to stop it. Everything else is cost inefficient. It costs too much to do what they want to do, and it's not going to work. Really not
so what do you suggest?
Me? Well, it begins with why these type of things don't happen in urban environments that have metal detectors. Metal detectors work. And that would be one of the best solutions to even doing this.
I don't mean to interrupt, but don't we have metal detectors in all the schools?
No, sir.
No.
I'm talking about schools that are in Florida, in rural areas, in suburban areas. These schools where these shootings just took place, I do not believe they had metal detectors. You know, because they may appear or think that environments are still safe or safer in more of a rural setting. And it's proven not to be true at all. So my view is that they look at another alternative, because this isn't working. It's not working for the kids. It's definitely not working for the parents who have to deal with the loss of life, who have to deal with, you know, hours and hours of therapy sessions to try to get themselves back together again from such a traumatic loss. Mm-hmm. Losing a child is devastating.
Losing a
parent or anyone else, but, you know, there's no way of having a quick comeback. It just doesn't work. So I came up with something that could work, plus it galvanizes the community. It gets everybody involved to have a bond of trust that's never been done before, because people don't trust each other anymore. So,
well, that's true enough. We talk about that a lot, that people don't trust each other anymore.
Yeah, so my solution galvanizes the community. It brings it together so that trust is no longer a major issue. And I want to be able to be in a position where I could get this to the right people who want to do something about it. And I'm just confused.
I got to tell you that when I want to get something to the people and I can't get people to listen to me, what I do is I get it to the press. That's what I try to do.
Okay.
And I've done that on several occasions.
I tried to do that also.
Yeah.
Now, let me explain to you how I tried to do that. What I tried to do was when I went to Thurgood Marshall over on MLK in Southeast, it's a charter school, and the survivors were there, and they were actually speaking with the kids who had also had a situation of loss of life of one of their students. So I had a chance to put this directly into the hands of one of the news reporters on Channel 5. His name is Matt Ackland, and he has not gotten back to me yet.
So, well, Matt's a good guy, basically. I mean, I've dealt with him for years. You know, and also I might suggest to you that you might contact the people that put the movement together. You know, there were 800,000 kids, not kids, but 800,000 people in D.C. Yeah,
I don't know what other suggestions to give you. Okay. And I have not had the response that I thought that I should have received.
Well, and Maurice, just so you know, they've been in recess for a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's and back to business tomorrow. Yeah. So that takes off
you're
7 to 10 days.
The officials? Is that who you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds good. However, recess or not, there's still people who receive this information. They don't have to be lawmakers. They have to be people who have positions to make sure this information gets to the right people. None of that's taking place. None of that is going on.
And well, you got to keep trying. You can't give up. But thanks for calling in.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Maurice. Keith, what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, that's a complex issue. I just would give Mr. Maurice Marshall the same advice you guys just did. Just keep trying, keep plugging away, because it's an uphill battle. And he just got to keep plugging away, because we've all been there before as activists. And sometimes you just got to be persistent and be creative, whether it's hitting the press or attending events where these movers and shakers are, and putting it in their hands personally. But quite frankly, you just got to stay out there, because we've all been there before. And activism, the operative word to movement is you got to move. So he just has to be persistent and keep moving. But just very quickly, Senator, I'd like to pause just to thank you, because since we have we briefly spoke about Reverend Fauntroy, I'd just like to thank you, and I don't know if this is the right time to do it, because you've been – one reason I've always respected you, Senator, is because long before you were elected official, you were very active with the D.C. statehood movement and all like that. Was assassinated. It was a pivotal moment, but we still had to move forward. And one of the ways we can honor Dr. King is
King was a friend and brother to Washington, D.C. He came to D.C. on many occasions to respond to the call of Walter Fauntroy for the home D.C. Home Rule marches, which was a precursor to today's modern-day D.C. statehood movement, which you were and still are a point person on that. So I want to thank you for just waving the flag for D.C. statehood, and that's how people can be active today and move forward from April 4th and beyond. So thank you for that. And then just very quickly, just one thing, Michael, we're coming up on April 11th. That was a big statehood arrest when 4 or 5 years ago in the Vincent Gray administration,
yeah,
73 people were arrested. And I know you were out there that day. I was one of the people arrested, and I was, quite frankly, one of the remaining eight that was facing jail time because we didn't bail ourselves out. I had Attorney Johnny Barnes represent me, and the charge was emboldening. And Johnny beat the case because I was looking at jail time. I was there, Anise Jenkins, and it was eight other of us, Mr. Lawrence Harris, Jack Evans, and some other people. We were facing jail time. So this is also the anniversary of the D.C. statehood arrest of 73 people, and I just want to pause and acknowledge those people, such as yourself, who keep the statehood movement alive.
Keith,
well,
may
thanks,
I ask?
Keithan.
What keeps you going? How do you keep your passion?
Well, I tell you, and I can answer that in 10 words or less. That when Dr. King was assassinated on April 4th, the one thing that keeps me going, Reverend Fauntroy shut us down. All them hoodlums and thugs, he told us to go home and pray. And I knew if I wanted to do anything, I had to be a part of something positive and redirect my energy. So quite frankly, when I see Reverend Fauntroy, I'm going to thank him, because he was the single most important factor for me turning my life around. So in other words, I went to my first march when I was 17 or 18, and I haven't been home yet, Maria. It's just one big march, you know. So
wow.
Just like Senator Brown, he's out everywhere I see him. I pass him out in the field. We out there, and it's just an ongoing thing. It's just a lifelong thing when you get activist, you know. Yeah.
I think that's very true, Keith, and we encourage people to get young people out there, because that is exactly what happens, is that you get to be an activist and you keep on going, and maybe these young people who have come on the gun issue, for example, they may be the people that make the difference, because they'll have the staying power. It really is something that you know, gets in your blood and you keep on doing it. And, you know, when you talk about being arrested, for example, I just want to add that when I went to court, I was represented by another attorney that didn't get me off. But you know what? At the end of the trial, the judge said, "You're my hero for standing up for what you believe in." And then he whacked down the gavel and said, "But you still can't sit in the middle of the street. You're guilty." So I had to pay $100.
Yes. That was it. That was a good occasion. Yeah. And getting back to what you're saying, this current student movement, it's issues like that just spark a movement. See, Dr. King called it a zeitgeist moment. Just like when Rosa Parks, other people was arrested before the Rosa Parks bus sit-in, and which King and then the Montgomery bus boycott lasted 364 days, almost a year to the day. But what happened? Other people got arrested. But King was saying that the zeitgeist moment is when you have all the ingredients to make things work, such as, like, if you're baking a cake, you can have an egg and flour and mix it. You won't get a cake, but you got to have all the ingredients, egg, flour, milk, whatever it takes. So when Rosa Parks was arrested, you had all these different things going on at the same time, and that's what enabled the Montgomery boycott to be effective. And that's the same thing we are with the students that came here a couple of weeks ago. Maybe this spark or that mass shooting 17th might do another wave of activism. And we see it all over the country now. Students have begun rise up wherever they are assembled today on different issues. So quite frankly, I think we are witnessing a great moment in time because the students are starting to stand up. And it's just like when King and them was out here, it takes student involvement to get involved. So it looks promising as far as the future of activism.
Yeah, I agree. And Maria, correct me again if I'm wrong, but I think one of the powerful things about going to the African American Museum today was seeing the faces of real people, regular people, who really made all the difference. You know, one of the great honors that I had in 1980 is I got to meet Rosa Parks, and I was astounded that she was small. She was this very quiet woman. Was, you know, I guess I expected some big imposing figure because she had started this movement that you know, just snowballed. But these are regular people that are out there fighting hard and making the world a better place.
Yes, which is the truth.
And the fact that it was so crowded and it was filled with families was beautiful. And there were dads reading all the placards to their younger children who couldn't yet read and instilling in them this history and the struggle and hopefully this hope that, you know, we have overcome and et cetera. Keith, are you involved with the D.C. for statehood movement, too?
Yes, I am. I'm very active, quite frankly, because as a native Washingtonian, I've watched this city go from a from its early stages of self-government, and now we're still fighting Congress to get money appropriated to us, and then we're supporting our Senator Brown and the other elected officials, Garcia and Strauss. You know, who are our point persons. Yes, so I'm still very active. And we have coalitions out there. I know for a fact we got different groups out there. What comes to mind is Stand Up for Democracy, headed by Anise Jenkins and others. And it's just a whole host of people. And I just encourage everybody that if you want to find an activity, just connect with a D.C. statehood movement because it's a moving experience. And it's sort of like what you guys are talking about at the African-American Museum. These movements cuts across racial, economic, and cultural lines, and you grow as a person when you meet other ethnicities, and you know it's just a blessing for people to participate. So, in other words, I ask people to plan to participate in these events and keep this statehood movement alive. Yes, but I am still very active.
Perfect, Keith, and we've got all of our lines are filled with callers. So, Doug, please bring them on one at a time.
Oh, hi, this is Bradley Thomas, Senator Brown, Mr. Sanchez.
Hi.
Hi, Bradley.
How are you? I'm the current chair of Abolishing Neighborhood Commission 5E, and I'm also a fourth-generation native Washingtonian. I've known Brother Keith Silver for many years.
Wow.
I think it's a fascinating topic. You know, I kind of see the assassination of MLK Jr. as a pivotal event, not just for the nation, but really in the life of Washington, D.C. I kind of look at the trends and the fabric of the city as sort of BKA and AKA, before the King assassination and after the King assassination. Mm-hmm. I was actually a 14-year-old ninth grader at McFarland Junior High when the assassination took place. As you all who are Washingtonians might recall, the D.C. Schools were extremely segregated at that time, not de jure, not by law, but de facto. In fact, the schools were very segregated. Now, at McFarland, for instance, I think there might have been two or three white kids in the whole school, and there was one white teacher. And I remember that the assassination took place on a Thursday. I learned about it when I got home from school that day, and then the next day, schools were open. And we went to school that Friday, but there wasn't much learning going on. There was a very, very tense atmosphere that day. And as Keith mentioned, the rioting had already started. There was already fires going on. And I recall that the one white teacher in the school was a young guy. He was no more than probably 10 or 15 years older than I was at the time. And he was well-liked by all the students. And they had a policy at the school where teachers would be assigned days to be hall monitors. They would stand in the hall, make sure that students got to class and there was no commotion in the hallway and so forth. And it was his day. His name was Mr. DeJulian. And he was staying in the hall, and he was, I just remember you could see he was probably nervous, very, very nervous. He was sort of pacing and kind of a tense smile on his face, sort of hands behind his back. And that's sort of the impression I remember. And before the day was half over, they released school. They sent everybody home. And I happened to live at 14th and Taylor, the 1400 block of Taylor Street. The riots, the fires started downtown, and they moved up 14th Street, and they got as far as Shepherd, which is one block from Taylor. And I could see, we could see the smoke, and kind of a funny, not funny, but sort of a humorous story I can tell about that was, I said I was 14, and the older generation was terrified of what was going on. And we young knuckleheads, we thought it was kind of exciting, actually. But the older generation was terrified. And I remember the liquor store around the corner between Randolph and Shepherd on 14th Street was hit in the riots, and it was burned and it was looted. And these guys ran down our back alley carrying bottles of liquor stolen from the store. And my mother saw them out of the back window, and she was, oh, my gosh, they have Molotov cocktails. They have Molotov cocktails. I said, no, Mom, those are not Molotov cocktails. That's whiskey from the liquor store. But, yeah, that was quite a time. And, you know, I was telling Keith a few days ago that when the National Guard came in, they stationed the National Guard on the athletic field at Roosevelt High School, which was right behind, or I guess McFarland was behind Roosevelt. So it was a couple of blocks from my house. And that's where that was the staging point for all the troops and the jeeps and the half tracks and so forth. So we were kind of right in the middle of what was going on at the time. But the whole city has dramatically changed since that time. The demographics have changed. Of course, many of the old structures are gone. Very few remained on those corridors of 14th Street and 8th Street Northeast. But, I just remember this as a pivotal time in our history.
Thank you for that history lesson. And my recollection, of course, not being in the city at the time, I was right in the suburbs, and I remember, you know, I have vivid memories of it, but there's certainly much, much different than that. And it's important, you know, Marie and I were talking today. Thanks so much for calling in. We were talking about how people don't understand. My children look at the things that you're talking about as if it was ancient history, and it wasn't ancient history. You know, yeah. And those of us that don't learn from this experience, right, are doomed to repeat it. So it's so important for us to know this stuff. Thank you so much for calling in. Do you have anything you want to add, Keith?
No, I'd just like to thank Mr. Bradley Thomas for his great service to our great city. He's been a great ANC commissioner. I was a former ANC commissioner myself, so I respect his work, and he's highly respected in the city, and we certainly thank him for calling in.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Thomas. I, too, was a former ANC commissioner, and it's not only one of the toughest jobs in Washington, it's really one of the most important in keeping our city so diverse and with so many different characteristics in different communities. It really, really is helpful. So thank you so much for your service. And thanks for calling in.
Yeah, but we get paid so well.
You get paid so well, just like I do.
Yeah, the pay is zero. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, all right. So I'll see you at the bank.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Mr. Thomas. Bradley. Yeah, anytime. Do we have another caller, Doug? Anise is on the line. Anise is a dear friend, and Maria has a question for Anise.
Oh,
Anise, what have you been up to?
Hi.
I
have been up to. Hi,
busy.
How are you doing? We're getting ready for D.C. Emancipation Day. We've been really working hard on that. But I called to say I want people to remember the name Keith Silver. Keith is the type of person who keeps the movement going, keeps the movement moving. If you read about Martin Luther King, you read a trilogy by Taylor Branch, there are many people in those books, and Keith is one of those. He is a foot soldier. Keith is out there at all times. If you want to have a rally, if it's for a good cause, Keith will be there. Actually, Keith forgot. He is a board member of our organization, Stand Up for Democracy in D.C. Yeah, he's very involved with the statehood movement. So I just want people to know you're talking to a real soldier, Keith Silver.
Well, thank you, Anise, for that kind and generous introduction. It was so kind, I wondered who you were talking about, but I guess I appreciate it. Maria,
I'm very serious.
Okay, well, thank you. But Anise, I spoke of you earlier. I didn't know you'd be calling in, but thank you so much, and you, the Senator Brown, and others out there to keep the statehood movement alive, because you guys are the ones that keep me energized. So thank you so much. Did you have a comment? I'm sure Michael Brown has a question for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
Not yet, except for when we were going through the museum this afternoon, he pointed at some of the marches with the placards, with the people, with Carol Schwartz reminding us that every week there was something going on, and that enthusiasm and that momentum is not present. It's absent.
Michael
pointed at that, and he said, we need to have that happen.
I totally agree. The movement has changed. It's gotten very technical. People are planning a Twitter storm. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's what it needs. But we don't have the street action that we used to have. There are some things that have happened recently, like what's the guy's name trying to overturn our gun laws? I mean, these things would have gotten us out in the street, which they did in the 90s and recently, like talking about Gray when he was mayor, but it has become much more quiet and more technical. I think I would call it a technical movement at this time. And we need that spark. We need to be out there in the street.
Well, that's what gets people's attention, is the bodies. And I know the op-eds are important. I know the Twitter storms are important. I know the Facebook things are important. Instagram, Pinterest, all that stuff. But what's really important, I think, is the physical presence, the bodies. So when people are driving by, they say, oh, look, oh, that's right. We have taxation without representation. We might want to be reminded of that.
I agree,
Maria and Anise. I agree, because quite frankly, I enjoy a good illustration that technology. See, people on cell phones, they're on the internet, the blogs, and the movement is technical, as Anise Jenkins was saying. But that's what makes the work that Reverend Congressman Walter Fauntroy, who we spoke of earlier, he was the coordinator of the March on Washington, and as we all know, 250,000 people were assembled on the Mall in 1963 at Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. Now, when you think about that, they did that organizing without cell phones, without the internet, without Twitter, without Skype. That's some serious organizing. So I'm just saying the way we got to get back in the street and put that marching feet out there, because there's something about that tramp, tramp, tramp of marching feet that gets people motivated. So I agree. It's gotten too technical, and we got to get back to the streets.
Well, so Rosa Parks galvanized everybody because she didn't move, but it wasn't that she went to the airwaves or the phone or the radio or television. She put her body in a place and she shook her head. That's a simple act of solidarity with our human body. And I think we've become disconnected because we've gotten so accustomed to technology. But it's really, like you just said, Keith, stamp, 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 feet in the street. And that's really, I think, and again, you know, I'm an outsider. I'm on the left coast. I don't understand why this is still a conversation. It needs to have been put to bed a long time ago. You need your two senators.
Anise, tell everybody how many times you've been arrested for this.
Oh, I'm still stuck at nine.
Nine times. And never been convicted, okay?
Yeah. No,
I often say to Anise, If you've been arrested 9 times and never been convicted, it automatically qualifies you to be the governor of New Jersey. So,
All right, Senator.
We have another caller, Lynn, on the phone. Can we get her in? Thanks, Anise.
Well, yes. Hello. Thank you.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
Can you?
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to help teach people that whenever anyone is angry or upset, it doesn't matter what race, religion, creed, color, caste you are, or wealth, that your answers are actually inside of you. And I'm wondering how we can get these enlightenment, community enlightenment centers, where we do all kinds of Heart Math Institute programs and classes and mindfulness programs and help heal people from, you know, with their addictions and mental health issues. We have all kinds of enlightenment and healing programs that we could actually integrate and actually create. How about inner peace police, inner peace community keepers, jobs, new jobs?
Well, that's an interesting concept. And, you know, as I think Anise and Keith and everybody has been talking about, the way to get it done is to start a movement. Just like our first caller, if you can't get people to pay attention, you've got to get out there and figure out a way to get their attention. And so that would be my advice to you, is to start a movement, get people on board and try to push for these things. I'm sorry that I'm not an expert on the types of things that you're talking about, but I can tell you, with any movement, the important thing is to get people behind it. And, you know, and we thank you for calling in and making a comment.
And secondly, Senator, I think the caller, Lynn, she touched on something very powerful, because before you can talk about peace and all of those other things, you got to find peace within. You got to have personal enlightenment. So I think she's touched on the key. We got to start, look in the mirror and start with ourselves. So I like the whole concept of what she just spoke about.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, Keith. And you know, we've all seen it in our lives that people that lash out or that the people that are bullies are often afraid. They're not in touch internally with who they are and what they should be, right, Mike?
Exactly.
The famous line from the Michael Jackson song, look at the man in the mirror.
Man in the mirror, yeah.
Yeah, you can start right there. That says it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can tell you that if we had more people like Keith Silver in the world, it would be a better place, in my opinion. What's on the horizon for you, Keith? What's next up? I know that we're going to have an Emancipation Day parade in next Saturday. I don't know if you're involved in that. You want to tell people a little bit about Emancipation Day? You know a lot about it.
Yes, quite frankly,
yes.
That's a pivotal moment in D.C. history, because as native Washingtonians and people that's been here for several decades, such as yourself, we know that the Emancipation Day concept started about 3 decades by a woman named Loretta Haynes, and she started this recognition of Emancipation Day with virtually no funding, and then after several years, you know, probably 8, 9, 10 years, the city got behind it a little bit and started putting funding behind the Emancipation Day Parade. Then when Vincent Arnn became a council member, he put some major funding behind the Emancipation Campaign, and since he moved on to another position, Mayor Bowser has picked it up. So Emancipation Day is an important date on the calendar, but more specifically, 3,100 enslaved black African-Americans. D.C. was the first city where enslaved people were freed. So it's an important event here in D.C. Quite frankly, I hold it close to heart, because I live 6 blocks from the U.S. Capitol, and where I live at was a resting place. It was a way station for the runaway slaves. But one thing that we miss out back then and today, abolitionists, they were white folks with goodwill. See, people, we can't get caught up in all this race thing, because whether it was back in slavery days or whether it's in the modern day civil rights movement with Dr. King and them in the 60s, we had white people that supported the cause then and now. And quite frankly, if you be honest about it, in 1960, not only was black folks being whipped, but the white people in Birmingham and Selma, and these, they had to live in them cities when King and them moved out, and they were they received, you know, they got beat up and all kinds of stuff. So I told African-American students when I speak at these junior high and high schools, you can't get caught up on this race thing because it's been white people of goodwill. You can't get caught up in race because it's people out there that it's a kinship, and we got to get beyond race. And as we know with the current climate of the country, everybody's, you know, drawing the lines in the sand, and we collectively, we got to get beyond that. So make a long story short, Emancipation Day is a good time for people from all walks to come to life, because abolitionists, when runaway slaves made their way to D.C., we helped build the U.S. Capitol, and the enslaved people helped build the White House. That is documented, and right where I live at, three blocks from here, Frederick Douglass preached. They have a plaque at Second Baptist Church where Reverend Terrell is the pastor, a plaque where six blocks from here, Frederick Douglass preached from that pulpit right there at Second and Mass Avenue. So this is a great time in this city, Emancipation Day, for people to come out and just fellowship with each other.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Joyce, are you there?
Yes.
What did you want to say real quick? Thanks. We're almost done.
I wanted to just tell people that there is a new movement, and that movement is Seniors Matter. We're finding out that seniors are being displaced from the city at an alarming rate. All types of things are happening to seniors. So we've started a movement called Seniors Matter, and we want to hear from some of the seniors about what's going on as far as they're losing their family homes. So that's what we're working on right now. We're talking to seniors. We want to have. We've asked the council to put together a hearing so that they can understand why so many seniors are being displaced from the District of Columbia.
Well, as a senior myself, let me thank you for that, Joyce, and thanks for calling in. And folks, we're out of time, so let me thank Keith Silver, our gracious guest, and let's have you back soon. And Maria Sanchez, my new best friend, who's now in Washington. I'm going to try to convince her to move
Pat's
here.
Mrs. Brown's my new best friend.
Oh, no, not Mrs. Brown. She always wins them over. And we're going to leave you with the song by Sly and the Family Stone, because when we were walking through the African American Museum today, this is the song they were playing, and this is really what it's all about. We're all just everyday people. Thank you so much, Keith. Thanks, America.
Thank you for our listeners.
Thank you for
making the time. And thank you, Keith, for your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See you soon, Keith.
Give the people their right to vote.